Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to The Paranoid Strain. This is an episode in the middle of our long-term, multi-part examination of the history, philosophy, and implications of human interactions with non-human intelligence. We call it unidentified because we're fancy, but you can think of it as our big UFO series. If this is your first ever episode, you might want to skip back to unidentified number one in the RSS feed to get the whole story. Please note some of the voices you hear, especially celebrities, are generated by AI because we feel it makes our book excerpts and other quotes more interesting. Rest assured that Fearful, Dana, and our interviewees are always us real humans, and we'll never cut that corner, now or in the future. Returning Strainiacs, we have a few requests. First, please email us at theparanoidstrain@gmail.com with feedback. We love it. If you use Facebook, please look up and join our friendly, active group. We also set up a YouTube channel, mostly just to help people find out about the podcast. But if you could subscribe, ring the bell, and play a couple of episodes in the background as you work, that would help us show up in the algorithm for folks that might enjoy us and swell our unholy ranks of fans. Finally, anyone who wants to go that extra mile is invited to join our Patreon at patreon.com/theparanoidstrain. If you subscribe at the $5 tier, I will eventually mention you in one of these intros, embroiling you in an imaginary conspiracy theory, as I'm about to do for the system. Yes, you heard me. I'm gonna rep for the system, and I'm not gonna apologize for it. Frankly, I'm sick of pretending that I don't love the system, and all you whiners out there who don't like that fact can go pound sand. In fact, I'm officially declaring this show is fully in support of the system, and that we will be trumpeting that fact from the rooftops anytime anyone asks us. Full-throated, unquestioning support of the system. That's what you'll get from The Paranoid Strain. And that's final. Oh, crap. I think I may have been a bit confusing in that last diatribe. Some of you may think I am trumpeting support of the various extremely inefficient, prejudicial, or just plain stupid bureaucracies and levers of power that underpin modern life. I see where you might think that. I should clarify that I am wholeheartedly endorsing a longtime supporter, the listener whose self-designated Patreon alias is, mysteriously enough, the system. That's the one we like. Not the other one. Glad we clarified. Thanks to all of you patrons for supporting us directly, and to all of the rest of you for listening and sharing. It means the world to us. Now, let's get this show on the road. Paranoid Strain Orchestra, hit it.
So if Von Daniken is a blowhard, if an influential one in certain conspiracy and fantasy-friendly circles, but you mentioned that his work has been expanded upon by subsequent authors, what aspects have these fellow geniuses delved into?
We could start with the biblical stuff. Von Daniken plucks material that can be construed to support his thesis from a variety of ancient sources, but he leans heavily on the Bible, and since I'm a lot more fluent in that book than, say, the Hindu Vedas, which are also a big Von Daniken focus, let's turn our attention to the good book. The first EVD-adjacent author we'll be focusing on here is Adrienne Jaffrey, whose book title really cuts to the chase.
It's called The UFO That Took Jesus.
Now, lest you conclude that the Messiah was abducted and probed by the same extraterrestrial miscreants who keep stealing and then returning our fellow Americans slightly the worse for wear, let me assure you that Ms. Jaffrey is suggesting instead that Jesus was, in fact, a space alien from birth, having been artificially inseminated into his mother Mary by his fellow ETs.
In fact, one of her provocative reinterpretations of mainstream Christian theology is to argue that the famous parable of the sower, related in the Gospels, was actually Jesus trying to explain the way that his brethren created humans out of existing hominids by manipulating the DNA.
True, but we're going to spend lots of time on this whole human-alien hybrid theory shortly, so let's focus on some of her other reinterpretations of traditional understandings of the life of Christ. One of the signature moments in the Synoptic Gospels.
The word means seen together and reflects expert opinion that the Gospels of Mark, Matthew, and Luke, which share many of their key scenes and even word-for-word language, were aware of and influenced each other. In fact, according to scholars, the authors of Matthew and Luke each had versions of the Gospel of Mark and word-for-word copied large sections of it, while also making changes and elaborations for their own theological reasons. The Gospel of John is doing its own thing.
And one of the scenes that appears in all three synoptics is the baptism of Jesus by John the Baptist, after which a dove descended in a beam of light from the heavens, and the voice of God declared Jesus to be his son.
Again, he insists that I mention that while these accounts are similar, the way they refer to Jesus as being and or becoming God's son are actually subtly different, for what he assures me are very interesting reasons that reflect disagreement among early Christians as the Gospels and theology were developing, and that you might want to read the book How Jesus Became God by Bart Ehrman if you want to learn more.
And who doesn't want to learn more, Dana? I ask you. But the most important thing here is that Ms. Jaffrey has the real story that the original Gospel authors totally missed.
Since UFOs were not understood by first century Palestinians, the belief was held that it was God who called out. Note that the Spirit of God descended like a dove. I would argue that this is a beam of light that came from the craft as it acknowledged Jesus' acceptance of his role. Those who sent him to earth recognized his submission to them and the role he had to play. From that moment on, it was officially a mandatory task. The word for spirit which is used is paraclete, which means advocate or helper in ancient Greek. So it was an advocate or helper of God that descended from the sky.
Wait, so his UFO superiors required Jesus to undergo a Jewish ritual cleansing and then sent down a beam of light from the hovering ship that looked like a dove for some reason? And all that happened so they could ensure their agent Jesus accepted his binding contract to eventually get killed by the Romans, again, for some reason, which wasn't a big deal, since they would UFO him back to life, and the beam of light that looked like a dove was a something-something that descended from the ship and was designed to help him fulfill this very confusing task.
That's about the long and short of it, Dana, as near as I can make out.
Does she provide any explanation for why this took place?
Well, kinda, if you squint. You see, the whole thing is about the kingdom of heaven. This is another one of them early Christianity topics that I won't delve into nearly as deeply as I would like to, but suffice it to say that most scholars agree, Jesus and his disciples were apocalyptic Jews who believed that God would descend from heaven in person within their lifetimes to establish his kingdom on earth and put paid to all those
Romans
who had oppressed and persecuted God's people.
Devout Essene Jews.
Because the kingdom was coming very quickly, the most important message, the one clearly reflected in Mark, the earliest gospel, is to repent of your sins, give up your possessions, help the poor, and in all other ways get yourself right with God before the judgment, which again, as far as these people were concerned, was happening like 3 weeks from Saturday. However, you will note that this arrival of Yahweh's kingdom on earth didn't happen either then or since. So as Christianity developed, and this fact became ever more embarrassing, later Gospels, especially John, began to de-emphasize the earthly kingdom and instead focus on the life to come after death. Eventually, the Holy Roman Catholic Church went with this version, plus a soupçon of eventual fiery apocalypse that will destroy all who oppose God, Revelation style at some point in the indeterminate future.
We covered this very weird and morally nasty final book of the Bible in our QAnon series.
But I told you that just so I could have Ms. Jeffries explain the real shit, which is that, in fact, Jesus was just preparing all of us for the inevitable future moment when his alien bros would introduce us to their civilization and planet, which is the real kingdom of God, dummies.
Those who do good deeds and believe in him as the Son of God will attain a reality beyond this one. My argument is that this reality is not and cannot be a metaphysical one. Rather, it is completely real. Jesus is referring to his home planet, which he was sent from. While biblical scholars are generally in accordance that this is just another demonstration of Jesus being an apocalyptic preacher, our perspective cannot and should not be a Christian one. We need to take a refreshingly new approach.
Okay, we're taking a refreshingly new look. Let us have it.
Jesus had a close relationship with the one who sent him. He refers to his father countless times across the Gospels. While it is assumed by most Abrahamic faiths that this father of his was the same God who spoke to Moses, our view in this book is that it was most likely the alien craft that was keeping a close eye on him and his mission.
What evidence does she put forward for this striking thesis?
Well, for example, Jesus tended only to talk to his father, that is, pray, in private. Why wouldn't he pray in public or with his disciples? Sure, there are actual, theologically and historically reasonable explanations for this.
Specifically, Jesus saw public displays of religious devotion as hypocritical and insincere.
But of course, the real reason could have been that he was using a secret walkie-talkie to speak with the mothership. I mean, I can't prove that wasn't the case, so obviously it's true, right? Okay, maybe you find Ms. Jaffrey's case for aliens and the life of Jesus wanting. How would you feel instead about the opinions of a well-trained, honest-to-God man of the cloth? Well, you don't have to wonder, because our next author in the tradition of von Daniken is one Barry Downing, Presbyterian minister and, as his Wikipedia article notes in the very first line, an ancient astronaut's proponent. Reverend Downing's major contribution to this school of thought was his book, The Bible and Flying Saucers, published at almost the same time as von Daniken's work, but focused more specifically on the events of the Old and New Testaments and how they are most logically explained not by supernatural interventions from on high, nor as the myths of ancient peoples, but rather by the application of advanced technologies by alien visitors as dutifully recorded by human eyewitnesses doing their best in the face of inexplicable wonders. We would excerpt this book in our normal style, but this time we have a much better and more adorable option. Specifically, we're referring to the podcast miniseries that the pastor recorded a few years back, hosted by his very own granddaughter. The 5-episode show examines the major parts of Downing's argument, starting with his acknowledgement that this view is not going to please either conservative or liberal Bible scholars.
My basic argument is that the story of the parting of the Red Sea is not the story of a supernatural event, rather it's the story of the work of aliens using advanced technology to part the Red Sea. And this has not been happy news to conservatives who believe in the supernatural story of the parting of the Red Sea. They've been very angry at me for putting this forward for the past 50 years. but
you have not given up.
No, but liberals are not happy about it either, because those liberals who suppose that there was no Moses and no parting of the Red Sea suddenly have to notice that United States Navy says that there are UFOs, there are unidentified flying objects, or as they call them now, unidentified aerial phenomena, UAPs. But in any case, there are things flying around in our skies. Our Navy jets have been chasing them. They can't catch them. They don't know what they are. And they're sure there's some type of advanced technology.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got something there that their government is finally admitting is there, although they've lied about it for the past 70 years or more. But in any case, there's something there that I believe has the technological ability to have done the kind of things that are reported in the Book of Exodus.
On the other hand, his granddaughter thinks her pawpaw is really onto something.
What I think is interesting from my perspective is the idea that you actually do take the Bible more literally, because you think of it through some type of, through science as well and through technology. And I think that's also fascinating, is that, you know, there's the idea of like the Bible is entirely symbolism, or there's the idea that the Bible is 100%, you know, that's what it is, what it is. Whereas from your perspective, it's like, no, the parting of the seas happened, but it's because we have this technology. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's this missing piece that that actually makes the story sound like it's actually possible. And I think that's why it's so fascinating to me, is that it makes the Bible actually make, to me, it makes it make sense, to be honest. It's like a missing piece that it to me, it makes the Bible more readable, if I'm being completely honest, and I hope nobody's mad at me to think that out loud, but I feel like it makes a lot of sense. It's like a missing puzzle piece.
Can you give us some examples of how he thinks this UFO technology to Bible miracles system worked?
Sure. Let's take the Exodus story, for example. Briefly, if you're not familiar, in the story, the Israelites had been conquered and enslaved in Egypt for hundreds of years before a hero named Moses rose to lead his people and tell the Egyptian pharaoh that God wanted him to, as the song goes,
"Let my people go."
Pharaoh refuses, leading God to send a series of gradually worse and worse plagues, culminating in the death of the firstborn son of every household in Egypt.
The Jews' sons were protected because God told Moses they should slaughter a lamb and paint the doorway with its blood. The angel of death would then pass over their houses. Thus, the Jewish celebration of Passover.
Finally, Pharaoh tells them to take a hike, only to change his mind and send his armies after them. In a big Technicolor Cecil B. DeMille showstopper of a miracle, Moses parted the waters of the Red Sea so that the Israelites could cross the bottom on foot. Once they crossed, Moses released the walls of water, drowning Pharaoh's armed men and chariots as they attempted to cross in the people of God's wake. Moses and his flock then wandered for 40 years in a fairly small bit of desert until they managed to make it to the Promised Land, what is now Israel, where they settled. Briefly, before we get to Reverend Barry's take, and at the risk of ruffling some religious feathers, we need to mention here that nearly all qualified experts, including Israeli archaeologists who have studied these regions for hundreds of years now searching for evidence, don't believe the Egyptian exile of the Jewish people ever happened as a historical fact.
The Exodus is, they believe, more of a foundation myth than a historical event. Sort of like the founding of Rome by Romulus and Remus, the twins suckled by a she-wolf.
But the right Reverend Downing is here to set you straight. It all happened, but it was done by aliens. And he has some pretty darn detailed analyses about how he thinks this whole series of events happened, especially the parting of the Red Sea.
"In the morning watch, the Lord in a pillar of fire and a cloud looked down upon the host of the Egyptians and discomfited the host of the Egyptians." So I don't have proof that the UFO moved from between Egypt and Israel under cover of darkness, but I believe that's what happened, because I believe directly above the channel is where the ET power, the propulsion, probably the propulsion power of the UFO could be used to split the waters. If you're going to drown quite a few Egyptians in their chariots, they need at least 10 feet of water, you know? A little swamp water will not do it. You've got to have some water. And at a depth of 10 feet, water weighs 62.4 pounds per cubic foot. At a depth of 10 feet, you've got 624 pounds of pressure in the seabed. And it's going to take that much wind pressure to blow the water out of the way. And again, if it blew the water out of the way, it's not going to be straight walls. It'd be a concave surface at most. In fact, they wouldn't have been able to cross the Red Sea with 150-mile-an-hour wind blowing at them. And so the wind is, I think, a correct reporting on the part of Israel. What I think happened is, with the UFO hovering above the sea channel, using some kind of anti-gravitational power system, or however it is that they propel, to split the waters, and whatever propulsion system they use, I think it goes in straight lines like light. And so you would get the walls effect, straight walls effect, which were amazing to the Jewish people. And furthermore, whatever power was used, I think it would create wind power coming out each open end of the channel. And furthermore, once the water was moved out of the way, further energy had to be used to dry out the seabed. Basically, the Jews were amazed, both both by the fact that they had walls of water and they crossed on dry ground. In modern UFO landing cases, when a UFO lands on the ground, very often the land is dried out, baked by the UFO's heat or whatever engine system it has.
There's a lot more after that, including Pastor Downing's suggestion that maybe the Egyptians were hit with a heat beam, which melted their chariot wheels right before they were drowned. But we feel like you get the drift.
As many of you know, one of our favorite things on this show is to imagine the scenario that conspiracy theorists propose is actually true, and then to play out how that would have sounded to the conspirators. If only we had some sort of stand-in for the Old Testament aliens in this scenario who could perform this little skit for us. If only. If only. If only.
So, Zorchad.
What?
Zorchad, we got that project. Operation, Desert Moisty. So, I think Moses is trying to get a hold of us.
Okay, come on, I'm coming.
So, how do we do this thing? What is it?
Okay.
They got that new app. What is it? What are we supposed to do?
Oh, I see.
How does this work? What is it?
I see the overhead view. Okay, there are the Israelites. There's Moses. Oh, yeah, he went straight up to the edge of the Red Sea.
Okay, yeah, he's waving frantically. He's trying to get a signal.
Just tell him to go around it.
This is why we got the app, Zorchad.
What's that behind him?
What is it? Who are those people behind him?
I think it's the Pharaoh and the host.
So let's go ahead and...
Don't push that. Oh, it's another volcano in Pompeii.
Not disaster, Zord. You're in the wrong menu.
Scroll back.
Miracles.
Scroll back.
Okay, so click the miracles.
Scroll back.
No.
Do you have to do an offset?
No, the other one. No.
Set the offset.
Hit the menu again.
Scroll back.
Miracles.
Activate. Okay.
What's it doing? Is it updating? Come on, Zorchad, you gotta keep these apps updated.
Ah.
Okay, just reset it.
Hit F12.
There's no keyboard. Just turn it off.
The Egyptians are getting closer.
Just concentrate.
Ah.
Concentrate. Miracles.
Scroll back.
Just click the first one. Click it.
Click. Okay.
Okay, so that says we turned water into wine. Great.
That's why it's the Red Sea. Scroll back.
Back to the menu. Miracles. Ooh, there we go. Part the sea. Part the sea. That's it.
Okay.
Click it.
Yep.
Okay. Let's look at the live feed here. He's still not paying attention. The sea is parted. Turn around, Moses.
Oh, people are walking
it's
past.
It's parted,
they
Moses.
They see it. The P doesn't
okay,
see it.
Okay, now he sees it. He sees it. Okay.
They're
okay.
leaving
okay.
it behind.
Okay. Keep moving. Keep moving. What are they? Why are they walking?
Run,
the entire
Moses.
Egyptian army's behind you. What are you just... Speed it up. Okay, they're almost through.
Okay,
almost
Moses through. Made it.
Okay, there they go. All right. Okay. Wait, what are these guys doing?
Oh, the Egyptians are in it now.
They're following them on the thing.
They're going fast.
Zorchad, you got to cancel. Zorchad, how do you cancel the miracle?
Screw it. I'm unplugging it.
Okay. There we go.
That seemed to work.
I mean, what's up with these new apps? Why can't it be a switchboard like it used to be, Zorchad?
We just route it and plug into
why
the
is everything?
Yeah.
Why is everything got to have a shiny new user interface all the time?
Scroll back.
Just click.
Scroll back.
No, the other
back.
One. No,
okay.
No. Zorchad,
okay. Scroll
click.
Back. Back.
No, no,
okay.
Zorchad,
okay.
Click.
Okay.
Zorchad, click.
Okay.
Zorchad, click.
Okay.
Zorchad, click.
Okay. Zorchad, click. Okay. Zorchad, click. Okay.
Was I? And of course, figuring out how all of this was supposed to work is made even more complicated because Barry believes there are multiple distinct alien species or groups competing with each other in their earthly meddling. But let's give him the benefit of the doubt. The aliens had a justification, whatever inscrutable reason that might be, to help this group of captive Israelites escape from enslavement by a nearby, more powerful group.
And again, there is no evidence this ever happened historically.
Right, but again, benefit of the doubt. The point is, even if you believed all of the above stuff and nonsense, what was the ET's long-term plan? They helped the Israelites escape, only to let them wander the desert for like 40 years, and then they establish a kingdom in Israel, only to watch impassively as that kingdom is repeatedly conquered by an ever more powerful array of neighbors. So, much as Jewish theologians have wrestled with the question of why an almighty God would let his chosen people suffer like this, We have the same issue with regard to these aliens. To wit, what's the big idea? What's the plan, Stan? Or, in this case, Barry? He has plenty more groundless theories to share. For example, part of the aliens' plan, in his telling, was giving the Jewish people special dietary guidelines, that is, kosher food laws.
This kind of ruling has made the Jewish people a national identity wherever they go. So whether they're in Israel or not, no matter where they go in the world, if they're eating kosher, everybody knows they're different, they're set apart. And it's just interesting to me that the rules that were put down in Sinai here over 3,000 years ago resulted in a group of people having a kind of a very clear identity of who they were, in part because of what they ate and how they ate.
Sure, the aliens thought, maintaining these dietary laws would be difficult and would cause the Jews to be seen as different and often despised for this difference in the nations to which they would be scattered as their kingdom was conquered and reconquered over thousands of years. But the aliens did it on purpose, knowing that the kosher rules would set the Jewish people apart and thus ensure that their culture and by association the spiritual knowledge that the aliens had entrusted to the Jews and the Jews alone would propagate and lead to historical developments, eventually allowing the aliens to initiate phase two, that is, Jesus.
This is a prime example of the post hoc ergo propter hoc logical fallacy. That is, the argument that because thing B happened after thing A, therefore thing A caused thing B. To see how this type of reasoning is an error, let's consider another explanation. The fact that Jewish culture happened to develop and rigorously enforce specific food rules for some totally natural cultural reason accidentally ended up setting the Jews apart from their neighbors. But because their culture was so cohesive, and those laws were believed to be from an omnipotent deity as a symbol of Jewish specialness, the people were remarkably consistent in following them, even when living among other countries during thousands of years of diaspora. Jewish people were able to maintain their traditions and their identity, even when they were a persecuted or despised minority in one country or another. Which cohesion eventually led to the modern political theory of Zionism, which in turn led to the modern state of Israel. Is this version true? Maybe, but not necessarily. This explanation is also subject to criticism as a potential post hoc ergo propter hoc error, since neither our nor Barry's version establishes a causal connection between the food laws and the survival of Jewish culture. But to its credit, our version doesn't presume the meticulous plans of little green men.
None of this gets any more sensible when we move to the New Testament. Jesus comes from the ETs, much as we saw in Miss Jaffrey's book, and of course his people, the Jews, reject him. Barry sees this as the mysterious workings of the ETs.
They are set apart, just what was said at the beginning here, that you're going to be a kingdom of priests for the nations to see. That's exactly what they're doing. And what are they showing? They're showing that the whole idea of holiness is that you got to be different from what normal humans are if you're going to be pure enough for God. That's one of the lessons that comes out from the way the Jewish religion was brought about. But the question is then, do the ETs that were associated with the pillar of cloud and fire in doing what I call this divine theater at Mount Sinai, were they divinely led to do this? Are they a higher form of spiritual reality than we are? And so they were taking a very primitive people and giving them an idea about the invisible God, which...
We know it's got to be weird to hear that a believing Christian pastor has this perspective. But Reverend Downing has decided that, while all of the Bible's miracles were the work of ETs, the ETs themselves are in fact God's messengers, sent to teach us all and put us on a better spiritual path. So in his rendition, God is still in the driver's seat. He's just delegated the miracle stuff to subcontractors. Why an all-powerful, all-knowing being would have to do this is never even considered.
But of course, if that's his conclusion, then wouldn't a Muslim version of Barry Downing be justified in saying the ETs, following God's instructions, introduced phase three when they revealed the Holy Quran to Muhammad? And doesn't this view, with its embrace of aliens from other worlds coming to teach us about spiritual matters, fit the revelations given to Joseph Smith by the angel Moroni far better than it does the travails of ancient Israelites?
In other words, why is it the ETs were involved in Bible stuff, but not in the creation of the Book of Mormon, which ironically has some pretty science fiction-friendly theology at its heart? On these questions, Reverend Downing is silent. Okay, so we're not bowled over by the sagacity of Pastor Downing's conclusions. He still seems smarter, more diligent, and more sincere than Von Daniken does when he bloviates about biblical stories and their presumed ET connections. Take, for example, this excerpt from Chariots of the Gods, where Eric talks about the strange powers of the Ark of the Covenant.
Yes, Indiana Jones's Ark, one and the same.
Specifically, this concerns Bible passages detailing what happened to those who touched the Ark itself, to wit, they were struck dead by the power of God. As you might expect, Von Daniken goes on to wildly speculate about how, based on the description of the Ark's construction in the Bible, we can definitely conclude that the Ark was an electric conductor capable of several hundred volts, and that Moses used it as a walkie-talkie for speaking with the aliens he thought were God. I bring all of this up to use this particular quote, which I swear is in the text to this very day.
The details of the construction of the Ark of the Covenant can be read in the Bible in their entirety. Without actually consulting Exodus, I seem to remember that the Ark was often surrounded by flashing sparks, and that Moses made use of this transmitter whenever he needed help and advice.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? The man is so fucking lazy that he not only wrote into his own book an acknowledgement that he couldn't be bothered to confirm his own allegation before printing it, but he has since then failed to check or update this passage at any point in the past 46 years. Even in the pre-internet era, one was never far from a copy of the Bible in any European country. Yet he couldn't be bothered to confirm what he thought before he slapped down an argument based on this vague recollection.
We're not going to cast the first stone as anyone who has a lazy day, but a lazy half century?